Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. I'm your host, Daniel Angrenon. In 2010, we spoke with John Fitzgerald about his book Bad Hair Days, which was about the act of hair coursing in Ireland. Today, I'm very glad to have him back on the show today to delve deeper into current affairs with blood sports in Ireland. The main issue we'll be talking about today is the update of a law, the Animal Welfare Law, which has not been updated since 1911. And we are hoping that through the action of John and those he's been working with, we can finally ban acts like hair coursing, fox hunting, etc. So welcome to the show, John Fitzgerald.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, so we'll just start off with an easy question. Can you take us through what a typical fox hunt might look like?
Well, basically, a number of people and hounds set off in pursuit of a fox. You have a fox hunting club which could have maybe hundreds of members, and it will have maybe 20 or 30 foxhounds. These are dogs that are trained to hunt, specifically to hunt the fox. And what happens is they go out into the countryside and they, obviously with the intention of taking up the scent of the fox, and then the hunt can go on for anything up to several hours and cover miles upon miles across country. And, you have all these people on horseback, obviously. I know this happens in America too, maybe slightly differently, but they would be riding behind the hounds. And if and when the fox is actually caught by the hounds, it isn't always caught, but when the fox is caught, it can be literally torn to pieces by the hounds, which is a gruesome spectacle, a very cruel spectacle. But in many cases, the fox actually escapes underground, and what happens then is that the hounds do catch up following the scent and all that, and you have all the hunters and the hounds surrounding this little patch of ground where the fox has actually escaped underground. Now, it may go into a drain, into an old badger set, or into an actual fox's den that's already its own habitat, whatever. But this is where it gets really cruel, because when the fox goes underground, the hunters are very determined to retrieve this particular fox. So what they do is they have a particular squad, and every fox hunt in Ireland has this particular squad. We call them the terrier gang. And these people come along with the terriers and spades and shovels, and they literally dig deep into the earth until they reach to the fox. And then they drop dogs down, one or two terriers or half-breeds or whatever, down into this deep hole in the ground to attack and possibly kill the fox. And then they try to retrieve the dog, which at that stage would be, you know, attacking the fox and maybe biting into its flesh and this type of thing. And so what happens is you have this awful scene where it's really, a circle of death and cruelty, where there's all these hunters standing around, many of them drinking cans of beer and all that, and the fox and the dog biting each other, etc., are dragged to the surface, and it's absolutely gruesome. Equally cruel to the dog as to the fox. So the fox hunt itself is cruel, you know, pursuing the fox for miles over country, across country, until exhaustion delivers the animal to the hounds to be torn to pieces. But likewise, this activity of retrieving foxes that go underground is even more cruel. So we're really hoping that this particular practice will be banned under the newly updated Animal Welfare Act. And I think with the vast majority of Irish people, according to opinion polls, share that view. But there is a problem, and the problem is that the fox hunters have very powerful friends in the political establishment. And so there's a big battle between the pro-fox hunting political lobby and the anti-fox hunting political lobby. And it's a question as to, you know, which side will win in that, you know, and groups like our own, the Campaign for the Abolition of Cruel Sports, and other groups like the Irish Council Against Blood Sports are campaigning vigorously to ensure that this awful practice is actually banned under the updated Animal Protection Law. And then, of course, there is hair coursing, which I spoke about in a previous interview dealing with my book Bad Hair Days and all that. Hair coursing is also very cruel, and to describe hair coursing to people who, in other countries that may not be familiar with it, I think the best way is to say, if you're familiar with greyhound racing, now if you can imagine greyhound racing, but with, instead of a mechanical hare, the dogs are actually literally chasing and injuring, mauling or killing real hares. So that's sort of a crude comparison, but the difference is that in hair coursing, there would not be maybe 20 or 30 hounds in pursuit of the hare. It would be, what happens is that each hare is pursued by a pair of greyhounds, and the idea being that the dog that does best, etc., is declared the winner. But in the process, the hares suffer. Many of them are injured, mauled, killed, and thousands of them are used in this particular practice every year in Ireland. So hare coursing and fox hunting are the two big targets of the anti-blood sports campaign here in Ireland.
And I've noticed there are a couple similarities between the two of them. You know, the idea of setting dogs on these animals in order to basically tear them apart. But I was curious, would you be able to tell us a bit more about the effects on the dogs or the horses that are like...
Yeah, exactly. Of course, horses are injured too, and this is another problem. I mean, people often talk about horse racing and the injuries that occur, but when you have fox hunting, you have all of these cruelties packed into one practice. You have injuries to horses, injuries to dogs, as well as the cruelty to the fox. And in hare coursing, in addition to the hares being subjected to this absolutely horrendous ill-treatment, the dogs actually suffer as well. And in fact, greyhounds in hare coursing suffer even more than greyhounds in greyhound track racing. The reason being that, now, for example, on a greyhound track, you have a mechanical hare which is simply going around in one particular direction. But in hare coursing, because it's a real hare, the hare is leading the greyhounds here, there and everywhere. So in addition to maybe getting caught and killed, the hare is actually leading the dogs all over the place, and many dogs tumble head over heels and suffer appalling injuries or collide with gate posts and all this type of thing, you know. So definitely, as you say, the other animals are victims of these practices too, you know. So people think, for example, that in hare coursing, it's not a question of just the greyhounds being the big bullies and the hare being the victim. The actual greyhounds are victims as well, and really it's a human thing. Human beings are setting up an unnatural situation, you know. Because in the normal course of events, in nature, greyhounds would never come into contact with hares in nature at all, because they're more semi-domesticated animals and they don't exactly roam the countryside or anything like that. So the whole situation is contrived. Like, a hare coursing event takes place inside a wired enclosure. It couldn't even be construed as, oh, you know, a reflection of what happens in nature, in the wild and all that. It's a totally contrived situation. And likewise, fox hunting. And there's an interesting thing about fox hunting. Sometimes fox hunters say, well, you know, we're on the side of nature and Mother Nature is on our side because animals kill each other in the wild and all that. But the interesting thing is that the fox is actually a dog, a wild dog, but a dog nonetheless. So the fox and the foxhound are not natural enemies. And in fact, the foxhound has to be trained from a very early age to attack and kill foxes, because otherwise it won't have anything against the fox at all. It's just basically another dog. So that's an interesting point that maybe people often miss, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it seems that a lot comes from the training, you know, teaching these dogs violence. And that, I would think, comes from the violent tendencies of once wanting to kill a fox.
Exactly. Yeah. And the whole thing, it's quite a pointless exercise. You know, the fox hunters claim, well, you know, that the fox is a cruel animal and that the fox will attack lambs and sheep and hens and all that. Whereas what actually happens is that the fox normally will take aborted lambs and lambs that have already died of hypothermia and that kind of thing. It's quite rare for a fox to attack sheep and all that kind of thing. It doesn't happen very often at all. And in any event, farmers can well protect these animals. You know, there's no real excuse for that at all. And as well as that, it doesn't actually control foxes, you know, fox hunting. It basically, the foxes that aren't killed or that aren't dug up from their underground lairs and all that simply move on into another territory, into another part of the country. So if the idea was to control them as pests, that would be a quite ludicrous thing to be doing, because you're basically scattering them around the place and driving them into other areas, you know. So there really is no excuse at all. And likewise with hare coursing, the hare is actually a very gentle creature and it's utterly inoffensive. And from a conservation point of view, it's part of Ireland's heritage. The hare is actually Ireland's oldest surviving mammal. It's been around since the last ice age, which goes back a very long way, you know. So it's actually featured on coins and on currency and all that over the years too. And it's a much loved animal. And the vast majority of people are vigorously opposed to hare coursing. But again, as I said, the particular lobby that supports hare coursing, for whatever reason, seem to have unlimited funds. And you really wonder, well, how any group of people, however small, would be sufficiently motivated to want to finance an activity like that and keep it going. But that's unfortunately the situation. And oddly enough, the Prime Minister of Ireland, Enda Kenny, is actually personally opposed to hare coursing. You know, and he's the Prime Minister and he's also the leader of the largest of the two political parties that form the government in Ireland. And yet, in spite of his personal opposition to hare coursing, even he is reluctant to personally intervene, although hopefully there's enough animal groups and people even outside Ireland who are maybe to contact him, as many have already done. He just might change his mind. He might be encouraged to, you know, to intervene and maybe nudge a few of these politicians to support reform, you know, and to support a ban on these activities. Now, the particular law we're talking about that's being updated, it'll be enacted finally at some stage in the new year, maybe by spring 2013. So there is a bit of time, but it can go either way, basically. The minister who's kind of responsible for drafting the bill and for deciding what goes in and what doesn't go in, he more or less says that he's open to the various lobby groups and all that, but it remains to be seen. You know, will justice for the animals prevail? That's a big question.
Mm-hmm. Would you be able to expand further on this? So, like, the last legislation of this type was in 1911, over 100 years ago.
Yeah, 1911, yeah. And actually, in the last legislation, exactly what we feared about the updated version happened in 1911. It basically protected animals, blanket protection of animals, but then what it did, it included what were known as exemptions. So it was more or less saying, animal A, B and C is protected from cruelty, etc., except in the case of hare coursing and except in the case of fox hunting and this type of nonsense, you know. So basically, the hare in Ireland is protected from other members of the public. Any ordinary member of the public cannot ill-treat a hare, but a coursing club may take hares and do what they do to them. So it's a ludicrous situation. Basically, it's a sort of a situation where certain privileged groups are entitled to ill-treat these animals. Now, that's what the 1911 Act has, these unfortunate exemptions. But the big fear is that the updated version will also exempt hare coursing and fox hunting in that way. Although the very fact that they have to be exempted really amounts to an admission that they are cruel, because otherwise the exemptions wouldn't be there. You know, they would be automatically included within the protective measures. Now, there are some good things as well in the updated Act. I better acknowledge this, like that the existing ban on dogfighting, which is a very cruel practice, and cockfighting and badger baiting, those particular prohibitions are to be strengthened and the penalties increased. But there again, it's a little bit hypocritical of the government to be talking about strengthening the ban on cockfighting and dogfighting while permitting hare coursing and fox hunting, which are just about the same in terms of cruelty. I mean, cruelty to a fox, cruelty to a dog, etc. You know, they're all of them are cruel practices. There's a lack of consistency there, you know.
Yeah, of course. And it's funny because that was exactly what I was hoping to talk about next. When I went to research this clause, I found that exemption clause very, very interesting to really point out the moral inconsistency, because it says that, you know, no one shall cause unnecessary suffering. But if you think about it, I mean, sport hunting and, you know, cruel sports like that, I think, considering that they're just done for fun, that seems definition of unnecessary.
Yeah, in actual fact, the wording concerning, you know, prohibition on all activities that cause unnecessary suffering to animals, that would be brilliant if the exemptions weren't there, because it would effectively exempt all cruelty to animals. I think it would probably close down a lot of the vivisection establishments and got everything, all of it, you know. But yeah, then when these exemptions come in, the exemptions amount to a tacit admission that these activities are cruel and that they're being bolstered and protected from abolition, which is an interesting point, you know. There is another activity too, badger snaring, which is, it's not a blood sport as such, but it's a cruel practice. You know, the badger is a very shy, nocturnal creature and quite prevalent in Ireland, but there is a practice where a government department actually is involved in laying snares for badgers all over Ireland on the pretext that the badger has spread TB, which infects cattle and all that. But there again, you know, the fact that it may or may not be a host for TB doesn't justify laying snares for the animals, because many of these animals die lingering dead from the snares. The idea is that they're snared and then certain people come along and shoot them the day after, or maybe a week after, and in the meantime they're lingering in the snare. So badger snaring is another cruel practice that we were hoping would be outlawed under this new legislation, but again that remains to be seen.
So would you be able to specify for us what are the biggest obstacles concerning getting these practices included in the new law?
Yeah, the biggest problem really is the pro-blood sport lobby, and it's quite a strong lobby. You know, it doesn't have the backing of the majority of the Irish people, but it does have the backing of people who are very powerful, like members of the judiciary, you know, high court lawyers and very, very powerful people and well-financed people. And they, in turn, can influence certain politicians by donation to them and donation to their parties. And, of course, this has been a big problem in Ireland, political donations, and that's a separate issue. But the pro-hunting lobby has no shortage of funds when it comes to making political contributions. And politicians, whether they admit it or not, are influenced by political donations, you know. And the animal welfare and animal rights groups, while enjoying much popular support, like for our campaigns and all that, we just don't have the same financial resources to be kind of influencing politicians in that way, which is actually not a very honourable way of dealing with politicians in any case, effectively buying them. But that's what the pro-blood sports people have been doing. So you're effectively up against people with very deep pockets when it comes to financial resources, and that has been the big problem. Now, the politicians also, you'd have politicians in certain areas who would be anti-blood sports and who would be anti-cruelty, but the hunting and hair coursing clubs and organisations in their constituencies would be lobbying them vigorously and threatening them too, and warning them that, you know, if they come out against hair coursing and fox hunting, that they will not be funded in future, and they will not get support and all this type of thing, and that campaigns will be orchestrated against them. And you know, so there is that. Basically, it's the politicians' fear of the pro-blood sports lobby that is the biggest drawback. As I said there earlier, the Prime Minister of the country, Enda Kenny, is himself opposed to hair coursing, at least. We don't know his views on some of the other activities, but at least to hair coursing. And the fact that he, in spite of being opposed to hair coursing, is still remaining quiet on the issue, it just shows how powerful the pro-blood sports lobby is. So it's a question of overcoming the power of that particular lobby. That's really the challenge. Now, we have some excellent politicians as well, and people who have become household names in the country there who are anti-blood sports and who are, you know, who've been putting up a great show, like in promoting our own campaign. That people like, there's one politician, Maureen O'Sullivan, and there's a woman called Claire Daly. And these two people, actually two women, are the foremost champions of the anti-blood sport cause within the Irish Parliament. But there, on the other hand, then you have the pro-blood sport politicians. So there's a real political battle shaping up on this issue, you know.
So just a quick follow-up, this is what's getting in the way of the current laws coming up. Is it also the fear of the pro-hunting lobby that is the reason why we haven't seen an update in 100 years?
It actually is, yeah, that's about it. Of course, attitudes to animals are different now from in 1911. So side by side with the passing of the years has been a growing awareness of the rights of animals and the welfare of animals. So, you know, there would be far more support for a ban on these activities now, obviously, than there was in 1911. But unfortunately, the pro-hunting, the pro-blood sports side is still around. Mind you, the pro-blood sports lobby wouldn't be as powerful as it was in 1911, but it's still very well financed. So we often actually wonder where all this money is coming from. But maybe they're obviously teaming up with pro-blood sport people and maybe other parts of the world. As, for example, there are very close links between the hair coursing and fox hunting people here and the bullfighting people in Spain, for example. So, you know, you have these people kind of networking. I suppose in the same way that we on our side network with groups abroad, obviously they're doing the same thing. So you have people sponsoring or promoting various cruel practices in different countries, networking and supporting each other. And, you know, there are people in, let's say, in Spain, for example, who would not want hair coursing banned in Ireland, because they fear that if hair coursing goes in Ireland, that bullfighting could be next in Spain. They have this fear of a sort of a domino effect, you know. So the bullfighting lobby in Spain are sort of supporting the hair coursing lobby here for that very reason, you know. So there is a bit of that going on as well. And actually, in the European Parliament, when hair coursing was raised a few years ago, you had the Spanish bullfighting, pro-bullfighting members of the European Parliament supporting hair coursing, not because they particularly approved of it, but because they feared that bullfighting would be next. So there is that attitude, you know.
Regardless of the cruelty, they just don't want to start a precedent.
That's about it. Yeah, and you have people, shooters or people who hunt with guns, who don't approve of hair coursing or fox hunting, but they lend a certain support to hair coursing and fox hunting because they fear that if coursing and fox hunting is banned, that the guys with the hunting weapons, the guns, will be next, you know. And there is that attitude, and they may be right in one way, because for example, when dogfighting was banned and badger baiting and cockfighting were banned, the animal groups did move on to other activities. But that, then that's a perfectly legitimate approach, because these are cruel practices and we'll have to be consistent. And, you know, if we're opposed to one activity involving cruelty to animals, we must take a stand on the others too, even if those other practices are more entrenched and stronger, you know, and that it will take much longer to kind of deal with them.
Absolutely. I just had one quick question I hoped you could clarify before we go for our break. Now, I was reading in the Protection of Animals Act 1911 that the sentence for cruelty is either £25 or 6 months imprisonment. Is this accurate? And is it in any way a deterrent? Like, do you think this will...
Well, that's in the old law. Well, unfortunately, its deterrence value is diminished by the fact that people who engage in these activities don't expect to get caught, and they very rarely are. Now, there have been convictions over the years for cruelty to animals in relation to, let's say, domestic animals. Let's say cruelty to a cow or a donkey or a cat or a dog or whatever. But now, in the new Act, those particular penalties will be updated, which is good. And instead of £25 or whatever, it'll be thousands, you know, that type of thing. But the problem there is that will only be in relation to the activities that are prohibited, whereas the activities we're talking about, hare coursing, fox hunting, etc., it won't apply there at all.
Because they're still exempt.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So one thing I wanted to mention, before the interview, John sent me some slideshows and some videos of the fox hunt. One of the things was watching a dig out. It had a very chilling effect on me, like, and not in any way to be apologetic to hunting, because it's unforgivable, but I feel that one would think that part of the appeal would be the challenge, you know, the potential of the animal getting away. But with the dig out, these foxes have absolutely no chance. Even once they run and hide, the hunters will go right into their homes and make sure they kill them no matter what. The entire concept of hunting is disgusting, but this persistence seems almost ludicrous. Can you talk about, like, why there is such determination to ensure that, like, it's not just that, you know, they're going out and hoping to catch a fox, but they will go out of their way to make sure that fox is dead?
Well, yeah, the practice varies from one hunt to another. Some hunts just don't bother digging out, but many of them do. And it's just, I suppose, some of them feel that it's a measure of their dedication to what they're doing. They feel they must complete the job. They feel that it's an unfulfilling experience if the fox escapes, you know. Even though they've had their day out and they've been riding horses all over the place across country and riding to hounds, as they call it, but they're just not happy and they just have to go all the way and take the fox up and, you know, unearth the fox, sending these terriers into the ground to attack the fox. And you have this orgy of savagery and biting and injuries to both fox and dog. And I suppose, you know, they just feel that the purpose of fox hunting is to kill a fox, that the sport is incomplete without carrying it to its logical conclusion. Although it's a contradiction, really, because they often say, the hunters often claim that when they go fox hunting, the real pleasure is simply in riding a horse in the open air, and that the killing of the fox is incidental. Whereas when it comes to this practice of digging out foxes that go to ground, you know, that certainly isn't just an incidental thing. It's a quite deliberate practice, you know.
Of course.
And, you know, even as you were saying, the hunt itself is bad enough and the chase, but at least with the chase, the fox may evade the hounds and may escape, actually. But this business of digging the fox out of the earth and throwing it to the hounds and all that is just, it's beyond barbaric, you know.
Absolutely. One of the things that also really struck me was there was a clip of a hunter swinging the fox around, you know, like a ragdoll toy with, you know, about a dozen dogs trying to tear him or her apart.
Yeah.
But maybe we can talk a bit about the more positive aspects. Now, is it correct that stag hunting was banned in 2010?
Exactly. Stag hunting was an unusual practice. The full title of the practice was carted stag hunting. And what it consisted of was the stags used were male deer, actually, and they were actually raised in captivity. And for a stag hunt, the stag was put into a horse box, basically, and the horse box was driven to a certain point in the countryside, and the stag would be released from this crate or horse box and given a bit of a head start. And then the hounds were released after the stag. And this is a semi-tame animal, and the stag would be chased for miles, and the purpose wasn't to kill the stag, simply to chase the animal to exhaustion. But in the process, the stag would run through woods and fields and ditches and get tangled up in barbed wire and suffer horrific injuries. And in many occasions, the stag would die, literally die of fright. And in many of the stag hunts, actually, the animals suffered heart attacks, quite literally dropping dead from heart attacks. So it was a totally ludicrous practice. And again, nothing to do with so-called pest control or anything. The purpose wasn't, as I say, to kill the stag, but simply to terrorise it, which in some ways is actually worse. But anyway, about 28 years ago, now it's been around for quite some time, stag hunting had been around for about 150 years, that particular form, that particularly, what would you call it, orchestrated form had been around for about 150 years. But about 18, 19 years ago, a group called the Irish Council Against Bloodsport commenced a big campaign against stag hunting, and that campaign had been going on for years. Again, sometimes without any prospect of success in sight. But what happened then is that there was an election and two new parties came to power, with a larger party and a smaller one. But the smaller of the two parties happened to be Ireland's Green Party. And so for the first time ever, the Green Party in Ireland was in power, admittedly as a junior partner in the coalition government. But the Green Party had as one of its policies the objective of getting bloodsport banned. And it wanted to get all of them banned, actually. But so it pushed relentlessly until it persuaded the larger political party in the coalition to go along with this idea. So in 2010, to make a long story short, the government, this government that included the Green Party, banned stag hunting. And it was a huge morale booster for animal rights and animal welfare groups in Ireland to ban this particular blood sport, because it was a milestone, you know. And of course, we, the animal groups, we all got onto the Green Party and said, now look, you've got stag hunting banned, let's go for coursing now. But shortly after that, there was an election, a general election, and two new parties came to power, the ones that are actually currently running the country. And the Green Party is not in the present government, unfortunately. So great success came about as a result of partly the years of campaigning by the Irish Council Against Bloodsport and other groups, but also the initiative taken by the Greens, you know. That was a big step forward.
Oh, definitely. So how would you, you know, suggest in building this momentum towards banning hare coursing, fox hunting, in the same way as stag hunting with the new government?
The present government, unfortunately, isn't as animal-friendly as the previous one. If the present government had even, you know, we have a strange political system sometimes. A very small political party can hold the balance of power. You know, to make up the numbers, the larger party needs a smaller party to get it over the, you know, the 50% plus one members of parliament type of thing. And sometimes a smaller party can use its influence as a lever to get through legislation, you know, as with stag hunting. But the two political parties that are in power at present don't particularly have animal welfare, you know, it's not a big priority with them. Now, of the two parties, one of them, the Labour Party, is a little bit more animal welfare friendly, but not to the extent that the Greens were. So, but we are lobbying the Labour Party intensively in the hope that it may nudge the government to include a ban on hare coursing and fox hunting in this new legislation. But as to whether we'll be successful, that remains to be seen again, you know. And, you know, there's a lot of luck involved, I suppose, too, because looking back to the stag hunting ban, if the Green Party hadn't been in government in 2010, stag hunting, I think, would still be here and we'd still be trying to get it banned, you know. And I think actually what would happen is that stag hunting would probably be mentioned in the new Animal Welfare Act with a view to exempting it from prohibition if the previous government hadn't already banned it. So a lot of it is the look of the draw as to which party is in power, unfortunately, in addition to, you know, the dedication of the animal groups in pushing for reform and change and greater protection.
Definitely. Just changing gears a bit, I was wondering if you could maybe tell me about a bit about your experience dealing with hunters. And
well, it is quite difficult, of course, and to get film footage of these digouts and other cruel activities associated with hunting and coursing as well, you have to go out with them, a camcorder or a video recorder or something, and that can be quite dangerous. And people who have done that have been subjected to the most awful vilification and threats and physical assaults and all that. Now, I haven't personally gone after the camcorder after the fox hunts, but I know of people who have in various animal groups, and some have been beaten up and all the rest of it. And threatened and all the rest of it, and film footage confiscated. So it can be quite rough in that way, you know. And also farmers, you know, farmers wouldn't always be the greatest friends of animals, but in this country, many farmers absolutely hate fox hunting because fox hunters come onto their land, they scatter all the animals, sheep, cattle, everything in all directions, and they trample over all the crops. So the fox hunters are no friends with the farmers, and the farmers don't like the fox hunters generally, you know. So that's another side to the issue. And some farmers actually bring along camcorders and try to record the damage being caused by the fox hunts, more in terms of their crops and to their animals, their livestock, rather than, you know, focusing on the cruelty. So there's sort of a second front opening up in recent years against the fox hunters, and that's Ireland's farming community. So it's sort of a three-way campaign, if you like, you know. But the film footage I should mention that you actually looked at there, that you referred to, that film footage is even more persuasive and more evidential, because that wasn't actually obtained by any of the animal welfare or animal rights groups at all. That footage actually came from a fox hunt. And it's hard to believe, but the hunters actually filmed that appalling dig out for their own amusement. And it was actually viewed in pubs and clubs, etc., around the country. The hunters actually, you know, had sitting back and smoking and drinking and watching this thing, which makes it all the worse, you know. But it's very powerful evidence. Now, a member of a hunt who was actually he became disillusioned with the cruelty of hunting. He actually passed that footage along to, I think, the Irish Council Against Bloodsport, you know. So that's how actually that footage came into the public domain. So it's very powerful evidence, and it's evidence that the hunters can't refute because, as I say, they filmed it themselves, you know.
That's really surprising.
Very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, first the farmers, you get a completely different perspective from there, but I find a lot of industries and practices that exploit animals, they do their best to keep it in the dark, right? So it's interesting in this case that didn't happen. So how would something like direct action and hunt saboteurs be affecting the fox hunting?
There are groups involved in direct action from time to time. Not as much as in Britain, but you hear about it from time to time. There are hunt saboteurs here. And mind you, they have a peculiar code. They don't actually act outside the law at all, which, surprisingly, think of direct action, you feel that maybe the laws have been broken. But what the hunt saboteurs in Ireland do, they leave false trails for hunts so that the hounds go off in the wrong direction type of thing, which is a creative way of doing it, you know. And another thing they do is they use hunting horns similar to the ones that the hunters use. You know, the hunting horns are used to send signals to the hounds to commence hunting or to move this way or that way. So the saboteurs use similar hunting horns to send conflicting signals. So what happens is sometimes they split the pack, as they call it. Half the pack of hounds may go off one way and half the other way. So, and the hunters become terribly annoyed about that because they lose control. But as to how effective that is, I suppose a fox might be saved here and there as a result. But I suppose at the end of the day, you need legal protection, you know. I suppose direct action, you save a few here and there, but, you know, you're still left with this awful anomaly in the legislation that the law permits, this awful, awful cruelty, you know?
Exactly. Multiple tactics are definitely required, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
So I just wanted a quick update on how the progress has gone with your hair coursing work. Is it basically that you're hoping to get it updated with the new law, or has there been any progress since?
Well, we're approaching it in two ways. One way to get it banned would be to have a ban on hair coursing included in this new law instead of the opposite, which we fear might happen, as I said, the exemption on a prohibition, which is the exact opposite, protecting the hair coursing clubs instead of protecting the hairs. So hopefully it'll be a ban on coursing and not an exemption for the coursing clubs, which is the opposite. But if we don't get a ban under this new legislation, another avenue that we intend to travel down is a private member's bill, which is a bill that can be introduced by a member of parliament. It's a very difficult one to get passed into law unless there's what's known as a free vote among all members of parliament. But two members of parliament, the ones I mentioned earlier there, Maureen O'Sullivan and Claire Daly, plan to move a private member's bill at some point in the new year with the aim of banning hair coursing if the updated government legislation doesn't include a ban. So that's a sort of a plan B, if you like, you know.
Right.
So that may succeed. Now, It is very difficult to get a private member's bill enacted into law, but at least they will certainly try. They'll be following the, I suppose, in the footsteps of what the Green Party did with stag hunting. They'll be hoping that maybe they can get sufficient political support, sufficient support in Parliament to get this enacted into law. But even if they don't succeed, they will have raised the issue again and focused, you know, maximum public attention on the issue. So I reckon that even if that particular bill doesn't get passed, it somehow brings us closer to a ban, you know. For example, before stag hunting was banned in 2010, there were numerous other attempts by politicians raising the issue and etc. And it's as if you have to keep attacking the thing, but eventually you'll get there, you know. I suppose in every country, every particular step forward is the culmination of years or decades of false starts and failed attempts and all that. And this would be the same. I mean, there have been so many challenges to hair coursing. Like there was a bill, an attempt by a member of parliament back in 1993 to ban hair coursing through a private member's bill. That bill failed, but as a result of that bill, the government introduced sort of reforms in hair coursing. They didn't amount to very much, but still it was interesting that the bill, even though it failed, compelled the government to concede that this was a cruel practice, you know. So each challenge in parliament, whether it results in legislation or not, it somehow brings us a step closer to abolition and to complete protection for these animals.
Absolutely. So I was wondering, what would you say to our viewers in order, if any of them are interested in helping with the ban on fox hunting, hair coursing, and other cruel sports, what would you say to them?
Well, I think there are two or three online petitions that can be signed. And one thing that could be done is to write or email the Prime Minister of Ireland, Enda Kenny, who, as I said, is actually opposed to hair coursing, and ask him, more or less say to him, look, if you're opposed to hair coursing, take your principles a step further and actually encourage the government and push a government, you know, initiative on this to ban the practice. Now, rather than calling out all sorts of complicated addresses and all that, there's a website, actually, that has all the relevant information and the petitions that can be signed on hair coursing and fox hunting related to Ireland, and it's banbloodsports.com. You know, it's an easy one enough to remember. So banbloodsports.com, if you go onto that website, it's actually an award-winning website. It's a very, very effective site promoting the entire campaign in Ireland against blood sports. So anybody who wants to support the campaign against hair coursing and fox hunting in Ireland and who wants to ensure that our newly updated Animal Welfare Bill will effectively protect animals should go onto that website and have a look at the various petitions. And there's also film footage of these activities on that site as well. Now, some people may not want to upset themselves by watching the footage, but if people want to see exactly what goes on, also on that same website you can see all the film footage and photographic evidence, etc.
Great, and we'll also have a link to that when we put this interview onto our site.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thanks very much for that.
No problem. So we're almost out of time, but do you have any final thoughts you wanted to share?
Well, no, except to thank you very much for your own time on Animal Voices. This is fantastic to get this opportunity, you know, to speak to people, you know, especially people outside Ireland who may not be aware of what's going on. And I can tell you the Irish government is very sensitive to world opinion and the opinion of people outside Ireland on these issues. And next year, actually, the Irish government is engaging in a big international PR exercise to promote Ireland's image abroad. So I think that's a great opportunity for people outside Ireland to very politely remind our Prime Minister that Ireland is a very scenic country. It's a pleasant country in many ways, but we need to clean up our act on animal welfare and particularly on blood sports like hair coursing and fox hunting.
Absolutely. Thank you once more so much for coming on the show. I wish you the best of luck with your campaigns, and please keep us updated on how it goes, okay?
Thank you very much again.
No problem. Thank you for tuning in. Animal Voices is produced and broadcast on CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines and CIUT 89.5 in Toronto. If you have any questions, comments, or show ideas, we'd love to hear from you, so contact us at animalvoices@gmail.com or feel free to get a hold of us through our Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr pages. Thank you to our team, audio techs Aaron O'Sullivan and Neil Harvey, Taylor Book with social media, and music collaborator Kevin Tillman. I'm Daniel Angrenon.
Have a great day.